Welcome to the Productivity Mastery Podcast, presented to you by myself, Stoyan Yankov, productivity and performance coach, keynote and TEDx speaker, and co-author of the Perform Methodology, and the book Perform, the Unsexy Truth About Startup Success. Join me on a journey to discover what some of the world's leading professionals do to be more productive, create peak performing teams, and build successful global companies. New episodes weekly. And now, enjoy today's episode. Good morning, Shane. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Stoyan. Pleasure to be here.
Where are you joining us from?
I am in a small town in Canada called Kelowna. It's about 5 hours east of Vancouver, so on the west coast. We're firmly on the Pacific side of the continent.
Thank you so much for making this happen and actually waking up 7 in the morning to be with us today.
I can't imagine a better place to be right now.
Really, really appreciate it. And let me just see, because LinkedIn is not going live, so we might have to
restart. Kind of
restart. Let me just see what's going on down there. Okay. Interesting. Let's try again. Edit. Good thing is when you do these things. All right. So we're live right now. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Productivity Mastery. Today, I'm here with Shane Spraggs. I hope I pronounce it well.
That's right.
He is the author of a book on a topic that I would say is probably one of the most useful topics that managers, leaders, entrepreneurs are dealing with these days, namely the topic of how do we build teams that are performing when we live in a world of remote workplace, hybrid workplace. And I'm really, really excited to go down the rabbit hole of how do we utilize remote work. So Shane, thank you for being with us, joining us 7 in the morning in your time zone.
Got my coffee. Yeah, I'm ready to go here.
So tell me about the book. Let's maybe start from there. Like, why did you decide to write a book about remote? By the way, sure. The book is called The Power of Remote. I just got my copy, so I'm not so far ahead yet. But The Power of Remote, awesome. Make sure to get a copy if you're listening. But Shane, why did you decide to write this book? Where is the inspiration coming from? How long have you guys been remote?
We've been remote since 2011, actually. So the company... its roots are in sales acceleration, sales services, providing channel partner enablement. And this is working with large firms to help sales teams perform better. And through this whole time, we've been working remotely from small villages all across Canada. It's one of our hallmarks of our company is we hire rural, and they tend to be fantastic people who are rural. A lot of them find themselves stuck in a small town for family reasons, or you know, they followed a partner who had a more prominent job, and they just couldn't find work, but they're actually really, really quality people. And so we've tapped into this workforce all across Canada, and we've been working with large enterprise firms in the States for 12 years now. And so at the beginning of the pandemic, it became very clear this was an opportunity for us to share everything we've learned about remote work in the form of a book. And so that book started way back in September of 2020, and it took us a few years to get it out the door. It was a bit of its own roller coaster ride, which I won't get into, but we are offering a service called Vertira Academy that provides training for remote work, and it also we're looking at doing some remote consulting and some remote team enablement. So, yeah, lots of things.
It is super interesting to hear that you guys, first of all, have been remote for so many years already. But also that I never heard somebody you know, hiring people from kind of small villages in the countryside, like is that a conscious decision or
it is actually a conscious decision? It stems from our executive chair who founded the company, grew up in a very small town and was faced with the same problems, saw her sisters face those exact same problems of being stuck in a small town and not being able to use all their experience there and their talent, because there was no, you know, no other options in a small town. So this, you know, remote work literally opens the door for people to work anywhere in the world. I mean, you and I are talking 11 hours apart across the world, and it's just the same as if I was having a conversation with somebody in town over link, you know, over Zoom. We provided these opportunities predominantly for women, actually. And yesterday was International Women's Day, so we had a post on LinkedIn about this. What we're able to do is we look for people who not only are not only in remote rural areas, but they may have gaps in their resume through, you know, things like they have children, you know, and so they have to take a break and raise their kids. And we're able to provide them with a small amount of work to get them back into the workforce. And, you know, we have a perfect example on staff right now, someone who worked, had their second child, came back to work 5 hours a week, is now back up to 20 hours a week. And I'm sure once the kids grow older, they'll grow with the company as well. And the way the remote work is done, allows us to find places for her to contribute. And ultimately it makes her a better workforce. And there's a lot of talent in these individuals. And so that it's tapping into an unused talent.
That is amazing, man. Thank you so much for sharing. And since 2020, when the pandemic happened, I guess remote work was out there, but it wasn't so, you know, everywhere, right?
Yeah.
But since 2020, everybody was forced to try to figure it out, right? Like to work remotely. And now in 2023, it's you know, you can rarely see a company that doesn't in one way or another use some remote or hybrid model for,
yeah,
like, be it for some companies just, you know, maybe one day a week or 3 days a week or some sort of a fixed model. And we were discussing that prior to the beginning of the podcast, is everybody's trying to figure it out, right? But
yeah,
but
maybe absolutely.
You've done so much research and on the other hand, more than 10 years you guys been working remotely. Yeah. So I wanna pick your brains on a number of topics, but where do we begin so we can set the right kind of a structure as leaders so we can potentially have a chance to build an effective remote team?
Right. Yeah. And you know, at the top of it, the remote teams aren't all that different from an in-office team. Everyone needs a good purpose. They need to know why the company's in business. But that is actually far more important for a remote team, because with what we found is with a brick and mortar company where you're going into the office, a lot of people get their culture from the socialization with the other people. And it's a bit of it's a bit overlooked personally, I think, because what happens is that you join a company, you might make friends with those individuals, and you stick around and you enjoy being at the company because of the people you work with. This is a bit controversial, but I don't personally think that plays into productivity per se. And the you know, developing what you need for a successful team. From a remote standpoint, when you don't have that, the company has to have a very clear purpose and provide a environment that people want to join, people want to contribute to. So in, you know, in our situation, you know, here we have, you know, our mission statement includes the line, every hour we save helps people achieve their goals. And that is one of our mantras, is that we're here to help others save time so they can achieve what they're trying to achieve. And that's when you join the company, that's what they become part of that. And then I'm not suggesting that you don't have to have a social aspect. It's still required, but not to the same degree. You know, you don't have to have, there's no opportunity to have birthday cake with each other, or go out to the, you know, the pub and drink a beer with each other. What you need is you have to have enough social to trust each other, to be open to the people you're working with. And quite frankly, since joining Vertera, Vertera is probably one of the most productive companies I've been with in terms of the people. The people who I work with are fantastic. And it may be because I don't have to be friends with them. And I don't, this is going to be probably be a bad soundbite. I mean, I really, really like working with everyone. I firmly appreciate who they are as individuals, but they're not around to be my friends. My friends I get in the real world, you know, after hours and after work. And that's where I get my social connection, my family connection. And again, not to say that I'm not friends with them, but it is, it's not as not as important in a remote work environment to have that deep of social connection. But what you need is you have to have a connection to what the company's purpose is. And that's key. That's the first step.
So the first step for everybody listening, if you haven't had a chance to not just define, some of you maybe to define what the purpose, what the mission, what the bigger, you know, why do we do what we do is, maybe it's about time to define it, but also to be very clear in articulating this. You know, this very often founders of companies or business leaders, they fail to articulate, to communicate consistently what this purpose, why do we do what we do, and somehow incorporate it into the day-to-day narrative of the company, right? That's what excites people. So thank you. That's already like the really, really good insight to begin with. And it sounds so simple, right?
Yeah.
But it's not about knowing, it's about doing it, right?
Absolutely. And it sounds strange, but a lot of companies have overlooked this, or they it was like a step they did, you know, 5 years ago when they formed, and they have it on their wall somewhere, they have it in their documentation, but they never revisit it. A lot of times the statements are so long and convoluted using marketing, marketing speaks, and it's hard to remember. We actually subscribe to the story brand approach. Donald, what was his last name? Sorry, I always forget his last name. Story
Miller.
No. Donald, yeah, that's right, Donald Miller. Yeah. He has a great dissertation on mission statements and how they have to be memorable. They have to be simple, and they have to be memorable. And I encourage everyone to look at that to see how that works. And we follow that approach, and you know, it tells people what you're trying to achieve, separate from what the brand vision of the company is. And then again, it's just giving people a little bit more understanding of what it is why it is you're here at the job. If you don't have that, you're just there to make money, and which means now you have a bunch of individuals who are doing it for themselves, right? And not working together.
The paycheck, and instead of something kind of bigger that kind of aligns it. It's really cool that you're saying that, you know, how important it actually is in a remote kind of setup, because as you said, like, you don't have the random chats by the coffee machine anymore, right? Like,
exactly.
You're missing out on all these kind of interactions. So having a great purpose that people can relate to, it's a good starting point. And purpose obviously is connected to the values of the organization. So creating a culture. And this is another thing that many companies are struggling with these days. And I've been traveling around trying to help leaders to set up their teams and define what their values are. I'm wondering, how did you guys define the core values of your own organization? And there's no right and wrong, by the way. Like, there's many different approaches in that. But I'm curious, how did you define and articulated the values? Was that a process that took a while, or did you come like to a company retreat? Like, what did you guys do?
I have to admit, I wasn't around when the values were created. They were created many years ago, and we've reviewed them occasionally, and you know, the we've stuck by them. We have values such as make everyone a superstar. We also have other ones like don't say no to fire drills. They talk more about how to do the work than about how to be, as opposed to, say a characteristic or an aspiration. And they resonate. We frequently share them within the company to tell people, hey, to remind people, hey, you either, you know, this helps us with one decision or another. That to me is the big thing, is that a core value needs to help people with decisions. So if it's just a nice thing, hey, we lead with integrity. Well, okay, what does that mean? What situation are you going to be in to you say, hey, let's not do that? That's, you know, we need integrity in this. Most people have integrity. It's not, you know, it's sort of, it's lip service to the whole process. But something like say no to fire drills from us, we bring it up all the time. Like we find ourselves in a situation where something's come up and it's the topic of the day, the soup du jour, have you will, and someone will say, look, say no to fire drills. This isn't our priority right now. Let's take a step back and recognize whether we're going to waste people's time with it. And it's a small thing, but it saves so much time. And we have a number of other values like that as well that that are based around providing a good service, which ultimately speaks back to our vision and mission of the company, which is to save people time and help people achieve their goals.
What would be your recommendation for leaders out there in terms of defining the values, but also getting their remote team to buy into them? Because I feel like when you are in an office environment and you meet people every day, it's kind of easier to, you know, to articulate them, to remind people about it. But in a remote workspace, it's a little bit different. So I wonder if you have any best practices to share.
Sure. Yeah. And I'm probably not the right person to do this. You know, Donald Miller does a really good job of this. I also encourage you to look at that from his perspective. One of the key things is not to make them up in a silo, though. Don't just go away and come back 1 week and say, hey, I've got your values for you. You have to live by these now. If you haven't defined them yet as a small company or even as a larger company, you have to, everyone has to participate in it, because you need the people who are there to come along with it. At least gather their feedback so you know largely where they're at and that they were involved in the process. So when you whittle them down and come up with the ones you want to work with and you share it back to the team, you can at least explain why you went with the ones you did and why you didn't go with the ones that they suggested. And I would also suggest, the larger your company is, you should be prepared to let some people walk or go if they don't meet the values of the company. So there should be, I would certainly suggest getting feedback from everyone in the company, include them in the process, and then narrow it down through conversation and brainstorming and with smaller and smaller groups of people until you make a final decision. Make sure there's one person deciding. Don't decide it by committee, and then have someone go away with, take the final suggestions, have someone go away, focus on them, and come back and present back to the core group of people why they selected those, and then work on a change management plan. Because like anything else, it's a change, and you have to be able to share with the rest of the people why you've chosen the ones you have and what they now mean. And then you can't stop there. You have to include them. I had a meeting just yesterday where we started the meeting by asking people what the core values were and if anyone had lived them in the last month. And that's something that I try to do as often as I can. And not only does it help remind people of the values, it's a great opportunity for people to praise those who have lived by them and share some great experiences. So it requires constant refreshing .
Mm-hmm. And since I know you are more of you like structure and processes, I wonder, do you have any recommendation? That'll be the last question about values, but I'm very excited about the topic, obviously. Do you have any recommendation on how the final product looks like? If you were to articulate the values in some sort of a format, like, do you have any preferences for, like, we have one phrase sentence with a bunch of different behaviors connected to them, or what would be your recommendation?
I'm not a design guy, but predominantly I would suggest make it simple. If it's complicated, people won't be able to remember it. We're a vision mission company, but it doesn't mean you have to do that. You can have a purpose. There's at the when you start really getting into the various definitions of these things, they're slightly different between them. A vision is different than a purpose, and a mission as well. And then we get to core values. Donald Miller says characteristics as opposed to core values. There's pillars. Just use something that makes sense for you and make sure people understand what that is and discuss the definition of it with them. So why is it we've chosen these and how do they apply? But ultimately, we have a simple Confluence page set up where you can go and see them stacked up: vision, mission, and then core values below it. And people can just go there and see them all at a glance.
That's right. Keep it simple and make sure they're honest values that actually give you a suggestion of how you should make decisions, like that the practical, right? So, yeah. But I want to go into. Something you talk about in the book, And by the way, the book is, I'm going to remind people, The Power of Remote. Go check it out. It's super practical. I haven't read it yet, but I had a chance to go through the contents and to read a couple of chapters. I want to talk about the, and it's part two, chapter three, which is around building a remote dream team. I think that's a topic that many people are trying to figure out, right? Like, how do we attract great people who are not just great performers, they're actually great in working remotely?
And you know, you're hitting the nail on the head there. It really is all about the recruitment process and finding the right people for it. And we have we have a number of things we check when we hire people and we look for when we're trying to recruit individuals. One of the big ones, and goes back to our earlier conversation about, first of all, we recognize that not everyone's suitable for remote work. There's people that went crazy over the course of the pandemic because they couldn't no longer go into the office and interact with individuals. There's just some people who I don't believe suit remote work in the same way I don't think there's people who don't suit office work. One of the key things we look for is we look for individuals who have a life outside the office, who want to get their work done so that they can go do what they love. And it's not, you know, it's not all work for them. It's a work-life integration or balance, however you want to put it. This stems from very far back in our history. Some of the earlier people we hired for Virtira were surfers, and they, you know, you couldn't only go surf on the weekend. You had to catch the waves when they happened. And we had individuals who would work really hard some days so they could take an early afternoon off to go the next day and catch the tide at the right level. We had people who were driving all around Europe trying to find the right spots to surf. And that sort of just helps cement this idea that you have to have a passion outside of life. You know, so for me, I hike a lot. That's why I know Gene. I play music, and I also work with the local college on teaching project management. And so there's things I do outside of work that I want to get my stuff done at work so I can get back to that stuff, which is fulfilling for my, you know, it's a well-rounded life. If you don't have that, work becomes, a very dark tunnel for you. You just, this is where burnout comes out. It's where people focus way too much time. They work on the weekends, they work on the evenings, and it just, I guess for me, I used to be there in one of the jobs I had a number of years ago. I worked for a very large company that, for 4.5 years. And during that time, my two kids were younger, and I literally have pictures in my photo album that I don't remember taking. I'm in them, they're in them, but I don't remember them because I was working 60, 70 hours a week. So even the time I had, I was thinking about work and it was completely clouded over. And that's not a way to live your life. So that's part of our goal at Virtira, is to provide healthy work-life balance. So I'm off track a little bit. So that's the key thing when you go to look for hiring somebody, is you talk to them about their remote work, their work life outside of work. And then there's some basic things that people don't check that people need to have in order. And this is going to sound strange, but if they don't have a place to work, don't hire them. You know, there's people who have small apartments they share with three people in New York, and that's not going to be productive for them. And as much as they might be the great candidate, you have to pass on them for someone who has basement apartment, or they live in an apartment by themselves, place that they can focus and work. You need to test basic functions like how are their skills with all the, it sounds strange, but with typing, with communicating. We try to put people through an interview over text messaging to see how fast they reply to things, how they do on video. And it's all these things that you need to vet before you bring someone on board, because if you don't, it becomes a problem for the team later. And these are things that are tough to teach. You know, it's tough to grow into that quickly. So.
And do you include that in your kind of interview process, or do you guys recommend people to get people into a trial period, or like what would be your recommendation? And so you can actually verify that the person is suitable for remote work.
Yeah, we use the typing test for people that they have to take a type. And it's no different than if you're a software developer, you go through the ringer trying to get a software development job. Doesn't matter how many years you've worked, you have to go do that recursive function test, you know, where show me how you would take the sentence and reverse it with a piece of metacode, right? We put software developers through their paces every single time that we hire them. Sorry, we don't hire them, but when software developers are hired. And so we feel you need to do the same thing with other responsibilities. When writing is key to your job, when the ability to connect and have a private space is important, so we have them go through a variety of different tests to confirm that they're suitable for remote work and that they're going to be great. And then, yeah, we do have a trial period, you know, 3 months. You know, we check with them every month to see how things are going and make sure that they're integrating with the team. And in the rare cases, we'll pull the plug on them because it's in a lot of cases it's better for them as well, right? It's best for everybody.
Absolutely. Talk with me about onboarding.
Onboarding is a big one. Yeah.
Is there any differences that we should keep in mind from, you know, onboarding somebody in traditional office as opposed to remote worker or remote workforce?
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that we keep in the back of our head is that when they're hired and they do something with us and then they stop doing it, they're sitting in their house by themselves, right? So that's a really difficult experience for people who've just started the job. And so for us, we make sure the first day is fully scheduled out. They have people to talk through. They have stuff to do. There are obviously lots of forms to fill out. We have self-paced training that they can go through, but not just the first day, the whole week. We make sure that they are introduced to individuals. They have conversations with people. And we also have a buddy system. So we take somebody who's at their level, who is responsible for checking in on them, being their first real connection at the company, and giving them a way to ask questions that maybe we didn't cover in training. Training's a bit of a, you know, it's a broad broad tool. It tries to capture all the generic stuff, and sometimes there's little situations that we may have missed. The buddy is there to help answer those questions, and that's not entirely different than what happens in an office. But in an office, it's sometimes reasonable just let someone come into the office, get their stuff done, and sit there, you know, go wander around, check the washrooms out, go for lunch, right? But in remote, you need to make sure that they feel connected from day one and that they have stuff to do, and that certainly the first week is organized, and that from at the end of the first week, you know, on the, you know, say you start on Monday, on Friday, you should talk to them and say, okay, what are your goals for next week? What are your goals for next week, as opposed to what I want you to do? And you talk through them with that individual and you set collaborative goals for what they need to accomplish in that first week. And then you check in again with them the following week. And then if you get past the first month, you do that the first, second month, and third month. And it really is about establishing that habit of working with them to define what work they need to do and getting them to commit to that work.
And would you argue that it's even more important to have like a checklist with,
yes,
or the things that they need to know and be aware of and how we do things and so on and so forth?
Yeah, I appreciate the calling that out. We have about 100-step checklist that we go through. Everything from, you know, HR to admin to IT, and little things that, you know, we've forgotten. And what we do after each new hire is we sit down with them and we review it. We say, hey, how did this go? And we make changes every time. We try to keep up to date with it and make sure that we haven't, it's staying current, and that we are capturing all the situations that people find themselves in as best as possible. So okay, that's another key one, is that any good process, you have to review and retrospect on it all the time.
Yeah, and often it's actually, as you said, great to get feedback from somebody who's kind of new, never heard anything about the company, or like now they start doing it. And if they get confused, then probably that's a good sign that you need to make some changes and optimize it. Keep it simple, make it simple. And I think one of the things, I love the suggestion about having a checklist, and it's not something new, right? But like, especially for smaller organizations, you know, you don't really have the time to create all those, like a checklist with all the steps and everything. And you kind of believe that you communicated everything clearly. But when somebody is new, there's so much new information that having things written down into a step-by-step could be actually saving a lot of energy, time, and make things more clear. So thank you so much for sharing that, Shane. I'm wondering, okay, people get onboarded and so on, but, you know, in the ideal case, everybody's clear what's the culture, what's the values, what's the mission. So these are really the basics, the fundamentals of, you know, getting the right people on board that are not just great performers, but they are good remote workers and they're fitting the culture, right? Like these are all major pillars. But what would you recommend in terms of creating a culture of ownership, right? That's something that's really difficult in remote teams. Like from my experience, I come from the world of movie production. Like, So I would be in an office with a bunch of creatives, and we'll work together, hands on, share information. You know, if there is a new information, if there is a new goal, we're there, right? Like, we communicate constantly. Hey guys, now let's focus on this. Now I'm working with a remote team. I work with many people remotely, right? And it's a different environment, man. What's your recommendations, best practices once again on how do we make sure we're on the same page?
Right. Okay. There's a number of different things. Obviously central to things is the instant messaging platform. Everyone's using Slack or Teams or WebEx to communicate, making sure that people have a good understanding of what's supposed to be there, how to use it. Part of our training includes outline of when to use email versus instant messaging versus a phone call versus a video call. It's important people understand from the very get-go the fundamentals of communication. We meetings become a bit more important. I find that meetings in an office setting, having been there, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, they're a little bit more relaxed and maybe casual than they are remotely. It's easy to bring people together and just have an ad hoc conversation. When you do it remotely, you need to have purpose to it and have an agenda for it. But more so, you need to keep track of the action items that come out of them and do something with those action items and put them somewhere and hold people accountable to them. We have a process we call days of the week that it's a deceptively simple approach to action tracking, where on Monday we go through all the list of actions. We tell people individually, hey, here's the things you need to do this week. Tuesday through Thursday, we work through individually with people and say, hey, how are you doing? Thursday, we look at the risks that might be inherent in people missing those dates. And on Friday, this is the big one, we share the results of that week with everybody. So it's transparency. And it's a bit of public accountability at that point. That you said you'd get this done, you didn't get it done, and it becomes quite clear very quickly when people are missing their deliverables, and you have to have separate conversations with them. So from a manager's perspective, if you are managing a team, the key thing for me is not to dictate what work people have to do, but sit down with them and say, okay, here's what we're trying to accomplish, and I need your help with it. Let's talk about how we're going to get to where we need to be and pick some deadlines that not just that you're happy with, but I'm happy with as well. So anyone who's worked on a project team knows that there's a sort of a Goldilocks zone. If the task deadline is too soon, people won't be able to get it done. It'll be demoralizing. If it's too long, they'll just not work on it in earnest enough. And it would also be missed because they had too much time. And you need to find a deadline that works, that puts the pressure on. But the key here is that they've agreed to it. So the other bit there that task or that work package, whatever you want to call it, needs to be connected to the goals of the company or the priorities of the company that year. So we set five priorities for the company. Every department sets two or three priorities per month. And theoretically, everything that they do rolls up to a grander goal that ultimately goes and achieves our vision and mission and purpose of the company. So they know what they're doing.
I just want to stop you for a second. Can you give an example of priority so we can get a sense of what do you mean by that?
Sure. There's a lot of different words out there. Most people think of them as OKRs, right? Objectives and key results. We've also worked with the EOS system where they call it ROCs. Other approaches, the traditional one is, you give goals, goals, objectives, strategies, and tasks, and various versions of this. It all comes down to the same thing. What are we trying to accomplish this year, right? I personally prefer the term priority because it's very obvious what the priority is. It's a priority. And so we sit down every year, our year end, we do a bunch of work to, first of all, gather feedback from the entire staff. So everyone has a chance to speak into the priorities. They share that what's important to them. We take that into consideration. We also look at the market, where it's at. We look at our sales. We look at our customer feedback. And then we go into a conversation about what are we trying to accomplish this year according to our longer term plan of where we want to be as a company. A couple of years ago, we did this remotely. Last year, we did this in person. It's a collaborative SWOT analysis we go through that helps us to discover the things we need to do to accomplish, to solve, to maybe either take advantage of our opportunities or minimize our threats. And then we slowly boil that down into top five things we're going to do this year. I'm big on the term priority because that's it's very easy to communicate. It's what priority is, but it's more so than that. You know, priority one, two, three, what's the top thing in the company you're doing? Because it helps with decision-making. You've got two projects that you want to do, and one is for priority three, one's for priority one. Well, you prioritize the one for priority one. And it's just very simple, right? You'll hear that theme, a lot of process, but it has to be simple.
So priority could be, for example, launch a book about remote work and sell X amount, number of copies.
Yes and no. Well, I try to focus more on the benefit we're trying to achieve.
Okay.
Right. So, what is the purpose of, what is the intention that we're trying to, what is the result we're trying to get from it? And then the launch of a book becomes one of the projects we do to accomplish that. Right. So, this gives people, if a good example might be, from a sales side, you might say, okay, this year we want to get into a new market, right? And then that's the goal to accomplish. That's the priority to accomplish, is to get into this new market. And then all the teams, then everyone on the company can then contribute to it in their own way. Whereas if you give a priority that's a specific project, then you're ending up with that's just that's being done as opposed to everyone being helpful to contribute to it. So we have a priority this year for identifying, we simply call it what's in it for me. What is the things that we are doing this year to be clear with our staff that they know what's in it for themselves, and that's resulting in a bunch of HR improvements that we're currently working on.
So. Yeah, I love it, man. You have the more like the direction. The priority is more like a direction, right? It's not it's not measurable or tangible. Like what's under it. Then you're going to set some specific goals and you're going to use OKRs or any kind of methodology to quantify it maybe as far as you can. But there could be so many different projects under this direction, this priority, which is main. And it's so easy for people to, in a remote setup, to organize, their projects, their goals, to even on a day-to-day basis, to have some sort of a compass like that. Gives them a direction. Which one should I say yes to if I have these seven choices? Which one is most important will lead us to the priorities?
Yeah, and it's definitely simple. You want to give something that's broad, and we also try to define some success measurements. What are we going to, at the end of the year, we take a look at this priority, and we should have some things we establish at the start of the year that would say, okay, if we accomplish these things, we'll be successful. But it again, it shouldn't be so closed up that other people in the company can't contribute to it. Anyone in the company should be able to say, okay, the work I'm doing accomplishes this priority. And it helps, again, it helps with the sense of community within the company.
So what you're recommending is weekly kind of like team accountability calls, which I love, where you talk about, you know, hey, last week, these were the targets each of us set. Here's what actually happened. You talk about maybe challenges. You like what would be the agenda of one weekly call that could be effective? And I know it can go in many directions, right? Yeah. But I just want to hear some examples.
Well, you know, as our leadership team, we are now meeting once a week to review our calendar and look at the projects we have on the go. It's a short half hour meeting to make sure everyone's communicating and understands what big things are happening. And that calendar has dates from every department in it. And so it could be anything from, hey, we have this individual starting work next week, to here's the messages we're sharing with our staff, to here's the next strategic planning meeting we're doing. And so everyone stays in the loop about the things that are happening in the company. And it gives a chance for us to ask questions. We also take a moment to look at the key metrics. So, you know, how's our website performing? But that's at a leadership level. And then we also look at the projects, getting a sense, okay, are these on track? Are these not on track? Do we need help with anything like that? The meetings you set up will be tailored to the work you're doing, right? You're going to have a different kind of work. If your team is a bunch of salespeople, you know, you're probably going to go through your sales funnel, talk about, you know, your successes and roadblocks and whatnot. But what's important is to have a regular cadence on those meetings so that there's an agenda. Ideally, it's recorded and people can go back and look at it again. We also have, where possible, we have somebody actually going through that recording to capture action items, because I don't know about you, but it's easy to make a promise and say, I can do this. Well, I can do this versus I will do this is two different things. When you're in the heat of a meeting saying, these are all the things I can do, you tend to forget unless you write it down. So it's, and then if those things just end up in a minute, it's kind of half the story, because then you get forgotten in a minute log, as opposed to, so it's one of the, I'm kind of meandering a little bit here, but a lot of tools these days, so for example, MS Teams will transcribe the meeting for you. Great. You have a resource you can go back to and you can do text-based searches on, but you have to go do that. You need to take it to the next step and capture the action items that you said you would do and hold people accountable to them if you want to get things done. Right.
That sounded like a pitch for David Allen's GTD book in a way, you know.
I won't be too surprised if ChatGPT comes and takes over all that for us and then holds us accountable, you know. But actually, you know, one of the other things we found, one of the phenomena is a lot of tools have, you know, weekly reminders and, you know, constant notifications, and not people tend to ignore them, right? So
do you have any kind of favorite apps, softwares that you guys are using? You know, like many people use Trello boards or ClickUp or,
yeah,
you know, there's so many of them, but something that you find that practically works, because the best system is the one that works, that people actually go to and they use it and it's simple enough for the scale, for the stage that you guys are in.
Right. And we've got a couple, one of the key ones right now is Smartsheets. I'm sure maybe people have heard that. It's deceptively simple. You can do a lot with it, but everything from keeping action items. You know, so I got my own personal action item log. It's the first time over my whole career I've had various things to keep track of, to-do lists and whatnot, and they last for a few weeks before I move on to something else or forget about it. This one actually has I'm actually using it mainly because Smartsheets allows you to create a form that allows you to put things into a Smartsheet, and I was able to create a form that I put on my phone. So if I'm out somewhere, I can just, you know, I can add something to my action item list through my form, and it goes in and then it triggers notifications and whatnot. So every team pretty much has a Smartsheet. Most teams have a dashboard that's related to that Smartsheet that shows how things are progressing. And then, so that's just for keeping track of things. And then outside of that, we use Miro is fantastic for collaboration and brainstorming and strategizing. Anytime you want to work through a concept, it's the visual tool people need. And I really haven't found anything other than outside of Miro that does the same thing from that respect. we're probably very similar to a lot of companies with the rest of the tools. MS Teams comes for free with Word and Excel and PowerPoint, which you pretty much have to have. So we're using that for our communication. We also use WebEx for the messaging side of things. Nothing too crazy on that side. But one of the big things for me is that, so go ahead, sorry.
I just wanted to ask you about the mirror. Like, do you guys use it just for creative brainstorming, or do you also use it for some sort of, I don't know, setting the goals and visualizing them? Like, how do you actually use Miro?
I use Miro from a strategy standpoint. We use Miro to build the book. You know, we put all the chapters, all the topics we wanted to build in the book. We organize them into chapters, and then organized. You know, we work through the structure of the book using Miro. I find though that there comes a point where you have to take what you've done in Miro and put it into a more structured program, some sort of project management tool or a smart sheet. You have to translate what you've done there. I know Miro can be used for smaller teams to do a very Trello-like Scrum board or Kanban board, but I find it doesn't do a good job. And this is my only complaint with it, of history. Being able to say, okay, you know, it does show you what changes last all, but I can't go back and revert it. And it's really tough to see when major changes are done, what happened to it. So it doesn't keep track of what's the missing a word for it, but it's too freeform, I guess is the sense. So we tend to do all of our planning on Miro, and then translate those decisions into more permanent place that we use.
Got it. Let's talk about engagement and how do we keep people, you know, motivated, engaged, and maybe even expanded towards effective communication when we are sometimes in different time zones, we work different hours. So what do we do to, you know, should we be more conscious about how we set up structures and frames so people feel included, feel engaged?
Well, I think a lot of this goes back to some of the stuff we've already talked about. If you include the individual on the task, this definition, you know, and they're in there and saying they're telling you how they're going to accomplish something and when they're going to get it done by, they're engaged. They feel the need to live up to the commitments they've made. And that's not to say that's the only way of doing it. We do have a small amount of social side of things. At the starting of large meetings, we typically do is an icebreaker. The icebreaker is a great tool for learning a little bit about your team members, having a little bit of fun without turning into, you know, a long meeting where people are forced to watch someone eat or drink beer or whatever on a team call. And we have a long list of icebreakers we've done that I can share with you after this call, that people really enjoy. You know, 5-10 minutes, get a good laugh. People learn a bit more about each other, and it helps with the sense of community. You know, that we're all in this together. I like working with who I'm working with, and I, you know, helps build trust and helps build the relationships. If you've done it all, if you've organized it all properly, everything works towards a bigger goal, which, you know, they can feel a sense of accomplishment accomplishing their task. They can feel a sense of accomplishment of that accomplishing the thing that it contributes to. They can feel a sense of accomplishment of being someone who contributed to the priority of the company, which then therefore goes and helps to provide, commit to the direction of the company. So for me, that's all part and parcel, you know, organized all.
Yeah, and that's the thing we talk about prior to beginning of the podcast as well, right? Like,
yeah,
it is not the one strategy that's going to change your whole remote culture. It's what you do consistently, and it's so many small things that you you include in your practice. Yeah. You know, the regularity of setting the goals, maybe bringing the whole team to an in-person team offsite in every once in a while, so you can come together, you can meet each other, you can talk about the vision, the goals.
Absolutely,
it's the weekly meetings. It's the accountability. It's the the manager's intention to create space and time to listen to you, to coach you, and not to tell you what to do, but actually to help you to figure it out yourself, right? All these things, if they're there on a consistent basis, that's what actually makes a team perform.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing. The book is not a single solution that fits all. It's a series of recommendations that, you know, in a lot of cases are just practical. There are a lot of them really common sense. People have been preaching this stuff for years, but they haven't necessarily, a lot of brick and mortar companies, and this is going to maybe sound a little bit off, but they can be a little more sloppy with it because they're in person. When you're working remotely, you have to do it well. And certainly management is a good example of that. There's a lot of bad managers out there. And in order to do management remotely, you have to be a good manager. You have to listen to people. You have to have one of the things that, for example, we have a weekly check-in with them. We use a collaborative journal. So there's a page. We use Confluence. I can write things in that journal throughout the course of the week that I want to talk to them about. They do the same thing. And when the meeting, and it provides us with a brief agenda for us to go through every time we sit down. And this actually does a couple of things. First of all, it sets the stage for what you want to chat about, and it gives this, you know, purposeful conversation. And it takes a bit of the pressure off, you know, sitting there talking with someone who just, you know, without anything to talk about. But also it removes a lot of those small interruptions throughout the course of the week. I don't have to, you get the chance when it finally gets going, you can say, okay, I don't need to ask this question to this individual now. I'm going to put it on their journal. And when I get to them, we'll have that conversation then. And they do the exact same thing. So I found that one tool provides people with a way to improve productivity, improve management. Managers have to do a lot more to listen to their team members and ensure that they're being managed well, simply put. Yeah.
One of the biggest challenges that leaders, managers share with me is the difficulty to understand how people are feeling, whether something is wrong, like when you're working remotely as opposed to being there, because you can kind of observe something is wrong with Mary, right? But if you do not intentionally say, you know what, I need to listen, and listen doesn't only mean listen, right? It means watch, observe, see if somebody's off, you know, or something is off, right? Like, can you maybe talk about that?
Yeah, sure. And you're right. That's far more challenging remotely than it is in person. And it's even more challenging when you have someone who won't turn the camera on if you can't see them. You know, I'm a big advocate for cameras on one-on-one situations. I'm less of an advocate about it when we have someone's doing a presentation. Okay, you can go off camera and know to sit there and stare at the camera the whole time. But for a one-on-one, it's helpful to see how people are reacting, and you just have to get comfortable asking them, hey, not just how you're feeling. I've got a couple of kids, and if I ask them how their day at school went, they'll say fine. You got to pick better questions. You got to say, okay, what did you learn today? Or tell me about someone you played with at recess. And it's literally the same thing with better questions, obviously, when you're on a one-on-one. You have to drill into the work. You have to be aware of when things are slipping. So I see you missed that the deadline. Can you tell me about that? You know, keep open-ended questions going. And it's a bit of a, I don't think we have time to get into too much detail, but it's a grown skill to do active listening, to open-ended questions, and putting on your coaching hat, as opposed to sitting there telling them everything you think that they need to hear. but it's listening to them. And most people will tell you what's happening. And if they don't tell you, there's often evidence outside of that that you can say, okay, well, something's up because of this. And then maybe you have to have a bit more of a poignant conversation with them. Say, look, I know there's something wrong. Can we talk about it? But same thing happens in the office, right? If they want to talk about it, they're not going to talk about it. So you can do your best. You know, we're not psychologists. We're not registered therapists. We're people as well. They just need to care about people.
Just need to care about people. By the way, talking about questions, I opened on a page of the book, and I actually want to maybe just dig into that a little bit. There's a question in I don't know which page, but what does success really look like? And I just want to continue reading in the book. People love this question, but almost always fail to answer it correctly. This question is really, how will we know that the project is having the impact we want it to have? So talk to me about that.
Well, and that's exactly it. I'm a big advocate for writing up what I call one sheets, not a full project case study before you start a project, but just generally outlining what it is you're trying to, who owns the project, why it's happening, what it's supposed to be doing, who's involved and whatnot. And the big part of that is, what does success look like for us? A lot of people will say, well, success will look like when we get the project done. Okay. That's the goal. That's the job. It's not success. The write-up says it very well. Is that what change are you hoping this project will have on the company, on your customer, on your marketing efforts, that you can observe after the project's done, that you can measure whether you were successful with the project? And it's an interesting phenomenon. I find that people struggle with this at the start of a project. The moment it's launched, they seem to have no problem deciding what success looks like. Let's say we have a marketing effort to increase the number of users to our website by 1,000, right? That's the success measurement. We can say, okay, if we want to go from here to there, this project's going to do that, and it's measurable. At the end of the project, you can actually observe that it happened, and you can feel good about it being accomplished. If you don't have that ahead of time, you run the risk of people either saying 500 people was success, or actually achieving 1,000 and having someone else saying, oh, we wanted 2,000, right? It's important for people to outline out front so they know when they accomplished the work that they were set out to accomplish, so they can feel good about it and they can do more of it and they can learn from it. So, if you hit 1,000, fantastic. You don't hit 1,000, you don't hit 1,000. What can we learn from that to do that next time? So we can solve that problem next time. So success measurements have to be observable and measurable, kind of like SMART goals, right? What at the end of the project we're going to observe that tells us this was worth our time?
And when you're clear what success looks like, what clearly is expected to be delivered, it's so much easier to create accountability for people to buy into it, and also the strategies to come up with better strategies to get there, as opposed to I'm going to do X. Yeah, but where are you going? Why are you doing X, right?
Absolutely. Like,
are we on the same page? What are you doing? And the more you ask these kind of questions and you get back to them frequently, the more productive you're going to be in a remote, or not just in a remote. I mean, it's going beyond remote, but in a remote setup where it's less frequent communications, right? Like we don't have these daily interactions often. It's even more important to do this. Wow, thank you so much, Shane. Wow, I have probably 78,000 more questions to ask you, but I want to kind of wrap up with giving you a bit of a space to share with us. First of all, and I want to get back to it. First of all, everybody needs to go and buy a copy of this book. It's called.
We got the one in person here. There we go.
There you go. And one Kindle here.
Yeah, thanks for letting me post that.
So go get your copy. I really like it, even though I haven't read the full one yet. But also, Shane, where could people get in touch with you? And maybe can you give us a bit of a bigger context of what do you guys do and how do you guys support leaders and teams to build better cultures and remote teams?
Well, as I mentioned at the start of the show, our main focus is with sales. We help sales organizations perform better. We often will say that we observe that us working with a sales team will increase sales by about 30%. Simply just taking the administrative and operational tasks off their hands so they can go be salespeople. You know, salespeople are often hired to do what they do best, and it's a very very specific skill set, and you want to make sure that they are spending their time doing sales as opposed to all the other things that happen when you have to, certainly I won't get into it too much, but going to our website, virtira.com, V-I-R-T-I-R-A.com, tells you all about the services we offer. We've got four key areas. Sales acceleration, that's the service I was just talking about. Channel partner enablement, we work with multiple larger organizations to be the glue between those organizations to help them communicate with each other. We have remote enablement, which is a service we're currently exploring by providing teams with project management and their days of the week service, as you mentioned. We're working on a remote readiness assessment. Again, it's a pilot right now to see what, and again, anyone who wants to do that, drop me a line. I'm looking for people to help me with that pilot project. And finally, our Virtira Academy, which launched day and date with the book back in February. It has a number of online courses and delivered in person, well, on Zoom courses that that people can take and learn more about the specific skills we talk about in the book.
Thank you so much, Shane. And maybe just to wrap this up, what would be your final words to the leaders listening out there in terms of creating high-performing remote teams?
Wow, that's a big one. I think I'll go back to the original statement I mentioned earlier. You just have to care about people, right? Honestly, care about your team, listen to them, and provide them with meaningful work experiences that we make them come back to. Give them the right environment for them to be productive.
Thank you so much, Shane, and thanks everybody for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to share it with a friend and subscribe to Productivity Mastery on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other major podcast channels. We'll keep bringing you amazing people like Shane, sharing practical insights on how to be a better leader, how to lead teams, and how to succeed in anything you decide. So thank you for being with us, and see you once again next time on Productivity Mastery. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to subscribe to my monthly newsletter by visiting stoyanyankov.com, and also learn about the Perform methodology and the Perform book, as well as our various personal and team coaching offers. Stay tuned and keep performing.